The text is the most simple, the most direct, and the most difficult of all texts to preach on in a Christian church, also the most necessary. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. Not so many years ago, there were signs out on the roads of Newtonville pointing people towards St. John's. They looked like this. Remember? These little signs flourished in the 1950s and 60s, a way to sort of fly the flag of the denomination in any given town. The Presbyterians had theirs, and the Methodists had theirs. They got the Gothic arch thing on their trademark. Out in the Midwest where I grew up, the signs of the Lutheran churches sprouted like weeds in every little town with their stylized stained glass globes. They were all intended to let you know where to find your people, and at the same time to do a little cheerleading for the denomination. Did you have these in England, by the way? Never. Doesn't even need them, right? Okay. In the parlance that we have come to know, they were branding efforts. Branding efforts. They were designed by the central office of each of the denominations so that they would all look the same, and you had to buy them from that central office. Our signs used to be down on the corner of Lowell Avenue and Washington Street, and on the corner of Lowell Avenue and Commonwealth Avenue, kind of the nodes of our north-south axis. I'm not sure exactly when they disappeared. Maybe when the new bridge over Interstate 90 was built. But when I noticed that they were missing, I began looking for other signs around us. And I found a couple for the Methodist Church over on Walnut Street and a few for the other Episcopal churches in town. So I went looking on the internet for a place to buy replacement signs. It turns out that the design of these old signs for the Episcopal Church is still controlled by, you guessed it, the Episcopal Church, the folks down at headquarters in New York. And it turns out that the design for these has changed, not just once, but twice in the years since we had our own signs up on the street corners. The most salient change that I can detect in the new version that came out a couple of years ago is that the single largest word on the sign is Episcopal. Because, of course, that is the word that will resonate with the largest number of people who see the sign. Somehow the adjective has become more important than the noun. Or maybe we have somehow reversed the two. But there is more. In fact, there's much more to this. Because the currently sanctioned sign for use by the Episcopal Church is part of an entire branding strategy that was launched by the Episcopal Church a couple of years ago. We have a branding strategy statement. We have a set of general principles for communications. We have a palette for primary colors, and we have a palette for secondary colors. We even have required templates for PowerPoint slides, as though the world needed more PowerPoint slides. With all of this helpful guidance telling us how we should look across the entire Episcopal Church, there is a delicious irony in this document, and it is the first sentence of the introduction. I quote, "The Episcopal Church has a long history of local control and is more democratic than many other denominations." All of that is true, but it is sort of strange that it comes in a document that makes us all want to look the same. I have no doubt that this is useful. And I am sure that within the terms of what people who think about these things have to say. This is a very good example of the thing that it is. But for some reason, I can't quite get past the thought that it is a terrific example of our taking ourselves just a little bit too seriously. Or maybe taking seriously something that is not quite the thing that should be the most important in our brand. After all, what is a brand? Is it just a recognizable sign? Is it an image that is faithfully and uniformly rendered wherever it appears? People look at that shield with the red cross and the little light blue field with the crosses, and most of them have no idea what it means. Some of them might know that it means Episcopal. Oh, that's an Episcopal place. But what else do they know about us? Do they know we're a church? Do they know we're Christian? Why? Do they know it because of the sign? Jeff Bezos, the guy who started Amazon.com, has a great little quote about brands. He says this: a brand is what people say about you when you are not in the room. So what do people say about us when we are not in the room? What is behind our brand? I cannot find any guidance in the scriptures about typography or about how to use logos or colors for our signs. But in John's gospel, I think we have a pretty solid idea of how Jesus wants us to build our reputation as a community called by his name. The scene of today's gospel takes us back to Holy Week. It's the Last Supper. Judas has just left the room. And now Jesus begins what will become known as the farewell discourse. Four whole chapters of John's account of Jesus' life and ministry. It all begins with the words we heard in the gospel reading this morning. And these words give us, for one thing, the origin of that weird word Maundy Thursday in the Vulgate Latin of the Bible, mandatum novum, mandatum, Maundy, commandment. The commandment to those disciples and to anyone, who wants to claim the status of a disciple is that they live in a community characterized by love. Jesus, I like this part because Jesus is kind of a behavioralist here. Instead of just giving his followers a standard that they have to meet, you really ought to love each other. Okay. He gives them a cue for how to evaluate whether or not they are living up to the standard. And that cue is a social cue. The evaluation of whether or not we are living up to our commandment will be made by people outside the community. If we follow this new commandment faithfully, people outside the community will know us to be disciples because of the love we have for each other. So let me be very specific about what this means. First, it absolutely means you cannot do this alone. It makes no sense to say that you're living out the commandment of loving one another all by yourself. Second, the commandment that we love one another does not mean that you have to like everyone here. There may well be some people here you're not so wild about. I may be one of those people. And that's okay, because as far as I'm concerned, you may be one of those people. We are not called to be a monastic community. We are called to be a gathering of people who place value on investing in the creation of an intentional community of mutual support, oriented around the message of Jesus Christ. The incredible gift of this beloved community is that you can come here pretty unlikable on some days and it does not matter. What matters is that we love each other anyway. We look out for each other, we care for each other, because we need each other to do the work of ministry. We may rub up against each other the wrong way sometimes. But my individual experience of any single person in this place is much less important than the immense benefit that I receive from being a part of this place. That is what it means to be part of a loving community. And that is what makes it so hard and so different from anything else on offer out there. In fact, it is probably a little strange to people, because fewer and fewer people today grow up with any skills for being part of such a community. They have been raised with the notion that the only way of estimating the value of something is how it makes them feel about themselves. Back to the first principle, you can't be in community yourself. There's one incredibly important consequence here. This really does mean that what you say here, not just to other people, but about them, is a matter of living out our call to discipleship. If we just love people who love us back, what does that profit us? But if we show ourselves to be a group of people who get along with each other, even when we press each other's buttons, then people who come here for the first time will be amazed by that. Last, most important point. If people see in us a community of people who are living out this commandment, it does not necessarily mean that they will want to be a part of it. Because what we are doing here is dangerously countercultural. Our culture is headed in a pretty dehumanizing direction. Most of the cues we receive, most of the cues our young people receive, have to do with a stringent, relentless evaluation of your worth as a person. We are more and more becoming the kind of class stratified society that our grandparents or great-grandparents came here to avoid. And it's a ranking not just about money, but about fame or influence or connections or education. This past week, somebody sent me an invitation to join some online thing called Clout. Anybody heard about Clout? Clout is the thing that claims to tell you how influential you are on social media. Here is a modern day heresy for your ears. I do not care how influential I am on social media. If we choose to be disciples, if we choose to limit our freedom by living up to this standard of being in a community of people trying to love each other, then we will be confronted immediately by another choice. How is it that we will go about standing up for our kind of community when it is so different from everything else out there? How will we bend our whole society just a little bit toward a community oriented around the idea not just of tolerating each other, but of loving each other? Well, we could do it by complaining. We could complain about the way the world is. That is often our strategy. It is often the strategy of the church. I cannot tell you how many diocesan conventions I have been to where the principal order of business was passing resolutions expressing our critique of the way things are. We can complain about taxes or wealth inequalities or the prison on Guantanamo or the salaries of bankers. We can do all that, and quite frankly, we do it often and well, and it accomplishes pretty much nothing. It reminds me of the old line from the collect in the prayer book that asks for us to be protected against the luxury of hurt feelings. The world needs unreasonable people to make change. That is true. But the most unreasonable thing that we can do is to redirect our energy away from luxuriating in our bitterness, and instead work on building an actual, real community of mutual support and compassion. Because that itself will stand as an indictment of the world as it is. One that gives the world, we will give the world hope instead of guilt. So here's the last question. Are we doing this? We, St. John's, are we doing this? Well, I could at this moment sort of shift into that kind of sermon that is filled with hope and beautiful prose, but instead, I have data. Someone who recently started coming to St. John's but could not be here this morning wrote me a note when he saw the title of this sermon. And here is a slightly redacted version of what he wrote me. Quote, "As someone very new in my experience of St. John's, I feel that it is a strong brand. From the first visit to the website, I sensed a community theme that was conveyed in a thoughtful video. It became even more vivid on my first visit to the church and was reinforced when I met many of the parishioners on that first Sunday. Someone even sent to me a welcome email." That is our brand. That is the thing people are saying about us when we are not in the room. The signs and the typography and the color palettes, all of that can help, but they are empty and meaningless without content. The content is compassion. The content is care. The content is this place of people who actually care about you, whether you like it or not. Whether you like them or not. That is what others find when they come here. And by the grace of God, we will help them find their way here, where every week we gather together around the table with Jesus. Amen.